ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and Ed Cowan for your Monday. Australia 3, England 0. As we head towards Boxing Day, just a four-day turnaround. Of course, Christmas to be jammed in as part of all of that as well. So we got a whole lot to chop up. My name's Corbin Middlemass. I am in Perth, beautiful Western Australia. Ed Cowan is all the way over in Sydney. Morning, Teddy.
Corb, how you doing? Mate, you look pale. You look white as a ghost. Are you feeling all right?
Feeling good. Feeling mate, fresh.
Your audio is terrible. You're looking... I saw on your socials you bumped into a few Australian cricketers last night. You had like some clear liquid in your hand. Are you sure your head's not throbbing? Didn't celebrate the return?
No, always drink responsibly. So feel good, feel fresh, ready to chop up a whole lot of cricket with you. I did run into a couple of the boys last night when they were out celebrating. It certainly wasn't by design. We just happened to be in the same place. And the guy who, I mean, he's the most popular guy in Adelaide, clearly, but he might just be the most popular man in Australia. In Travis Head, he was at the centre of the party, which you can probably understand. And why wouldn't he be? What a series he's had so far. And the Aussie boys, quite rightfully, celebrating as they should, Teddy, on the back of a series win inside 11 days.
I think any time you win a Test match series, let alone a home Ashes series, it is time to let the hair down, fellas. So I'm glad that they were out and about. Travis Head, obviously, you know, not sick of the accolades from the centre of the ground, decided to get the accolades from the centre of said establishment. So well played to him. I'm glad everyone had a great night. Onwards and upwards to Melbourne. We've got plenty to talk about.
Just a couple of things before we move away from yesterday. And obviously we did a podcast last night, so you can go back and listen to that. But do you think they should present the urn once it's been retained? Like, should we have seen the Aussies actually get the urn yesterday?
Yes. I mean, that's my personal view. I think when the series is done, that's when there should be some presentation. But that's long gone in Test match cricket. It's very much preparing. They know at the end of each series, the presentation takes place, and there's obviously some logistics around that. So to keep that consistent. But there's obviously a situation, and we've seen this in the past, where a team wins the series but loses the last test, and you present the end of game presentation, and then you move on to the end of series and it feels a bit clunky. But I'm unsure that's going to happen in this series, the way England are going.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, is it a big deal if they do it twice? Like, just do it at the end of the third test and then do it again at the end of the fifth test? Like, you can – I don't know. I think there's a way.
I think you're underestimating the logistics that goes into, you know, the fireworks and the 5-0 on the hand and all the things around it. I would love the urn to be presented, a team photo to mark the occasion on the day that you win it. But as I said, those days are long gone. Did you lose your microphone in transit?
You saw me try and plug it in. It didn't, for whatever reason. It was working last night. It's not working today. I don't know what happened as I made the move from Adelaide to Perth, but somehow that's gone down. So I'm down.
Sorry, apologies to all our listeners. It happens once a year. Happens once a year to me. Happens once a year to you. You're allowed probably one little cross, and this is your one right before the new year.
I was going to see if Santa can bring me a new one for Christmas. Maybe I'll see what's under the tree come the 25th. The rest of the fallout from the Adelaide test, so we learnt that, clearly Nathan Lyon's not going to play. I think we all predicted that, and we spoke a little bit about it last night. And then learning that Pat Cummins isn't going to play either. And again, probably not a huge surprise given the workload that he's had here. The three tests are sort of butted together down on the run home, so it was probably highly likely he was only ever going to play two of those. And given the amount of workload that the Ashes has been retained, and the captain will have the fourth test off. And interestingly, Steve Smith will come back in, captain the side, and the two of them haven't played a test together so far.
Well, we think Steve Smith will captain the side. I don't think that's an official word. We haven't seen him back from vertigo yet at training. I know that, you know, treatments are ongoing, and sometimes that can go one or two ways. Sometimes it can get worse before it gets better. So we assume Steve Smith's coming back, and, you know, maybe a bit closer to the test. If that's not the case, we'll have to work out who the next Australian Test captain is that will be ratified by the Cricket Australia Board. If that was the case, it would be quite an interesting discussion. But let's assume Smith in, Cummins out. I think as predicted, we knew he wasn't going to play back-to-back Tests, and he'll be raring to go for Sydney. And so we've now got lots of selection debates, and I'll throw a couple at you. I'm going to take the lead here because I feel like you know, with all the jet lag going on, I'm gonna just play broadcaster for a second. So the selection debates in my mind are as follows. Does Usman Khawaja hold his place? And if so, where? Does Josh Inglis hold his place? And if he didn't, it would be based on form rather than availability of other players. Who is the spinner if they play one? And so Nathan Lyon is out, but there is a world where they say our best team, like in Brisbane, doesn't actually involve a spinner. But on the flip side of that debate is the spinner that we do pick, we're actually anointing, because this is officially the next best spinner. And previously that had been Todd Murphy in the Ashes gone prior in England. But more recently has been Matt Kuhneman. And so I don't think it would be a horses for courses type selection if they do choose a spinner. And we can talk about those two and Corey Roccioli as well. And then it is who replaces Cummins? And, you know, in amongst all that is maybe Bo Webster plays, you know, to cover batting, bowling, fast medium and bowling off spin. And so I actually think this is probably the biggest selection debate and discussion that they'll have, which is kind of ironic given that they're three.
All right, let's work our way through them sort of one at a time. So is Khawaja going to play? I think that Khawaja will play. I think he'll bat in the middle order. So I think that that's where he'll be. I think they'll give Weatherall the series. So I think he'll sort of hang in and bat there the whole way through with Travis Head. Then it'll be Marnus, Smith.
But what do you mean by the middle order? You mean five? Because Smith comes to four, so now he's at five. And so now I've got a question mark if in your team of Cameron Green and his role. Does he move to seven?
He moves to six and Carey goes back to seven.
So Alex Carey, who was just man of the match, batting at six and got 100.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could also make the argument that the only reason he was batting at six to begin with is because he's a left-hander and there's so few left-handers in the middle. Whereas if Khawaja bats in the middle order, you got another lefty. So then you kind of, you can space them out. You can put the right-hander at six. You can put Carey back at seven.
So let's just pick this apart. I'm not picking a horse here. I'm just going to kind of put you under the pump a little bit. So put aside the fact that Usman is an opening batter and is 39 years old. You're saying he's the next best batter and he got 80. So what I'm hearing from you is Josh Inglis, who got picked ahead of Usman in this test, has essentially had one test match to prove himself. I know you're going to say he's had two, but the first one was because of injury. And the second one is actually we are choosing you over Usman Khawaja. And now he failed in one test and Usman made an 80, not 200, and you're going to reverse that decision that you made a week ago?
It's a very good point. I mean, I think my prediction's more on, I'm trying to forecast what they will do as opposed to what I would probably do. I think that's a very interesting point as to how they lean on what happened last week and on the back of those performances. I think the other thing is whatever's happening with Usman, I hope he's more clear to them. And they always tell us all the time, look, we got more information than what you guys do. And yet the way Uzi sort of conducts himself in the press, I'm always tend to believe everything he says completely on face value. He's sort of basically will come out and say exactly how he feels about certain things. And judging by everything he said so far, I haven't heard any indication that he's finishing in Sydney. It feels like we're the ones that are all talking about him finishing in Sydney. And yet he continues to say, look, I haven't put an end date on it. I don't know what it looks like. I want to play for Australia as long as possible. So I think that's also another fascinating conversation. If Usman's telling the selectors that what he's telling all of us, then that's another conversation too, that when is the end point going to be for him? And if they put him back in the middle order and he succeeds like he did in Adelaide, he might be there for the foreseeable future. Maybe he'll be there beyond the Sydney Test match.
Yeah, so, and that's a good point. I'm glad you picked up on that. There's been no intimation from him whatsoever.
No.
And this is kind of where I get hooked in. You know, I was comfortable with him opening and being in the team and supporting that as a selection philosophy up until the end of Sydney, because there are certain you know, off ramps in cricket, in cycles, the Ashes, India series, Test World Championships. And it's not as though he's been braining it for 2 years. At 39 years old, you have to start rejuvenating the batting. And all of a sudden in Australian cricket, timing is everything, because we actually do have some bright young talents that will be the future, that are not going to play for a year or 2 years or however long that may be, that you can blood and give great cricket to and will be better for the experience in a series that is already decided at home. And that's not even entering the argument whether he deserves a spot or not. That's just a philosophical question. And so you got to remember, this guy was picked to open the batting. So all of a sudden, I don't love the cake and eat it too, and now he can slip into the middle. It was a fill-in. In my mind, it was a fill-in for this test, like for Smith, like for like. Smith comes back and he falls out. And the selectors, you know, if they're thinking clearly, I think that's kind of where they land. I'm not saying they will.
Yeah.
And the only other thing in my mind is they say to him, hey, Sydney's the end and we're happy for you to play the last two and you deserve a sign-off, which they're well within their rights to, and Usman's well within his rights to take. But this middle ground of, I'm not giving you a date, I want you to make a call. Well, they made a call last week.
Yeah.
So I think they need to stick to that call. I don't think things have changed that dramatically, and you can't say that one test or even two tests for Josh Inglis is really an appropriate amount of innings to determine whether he's the next best batter or not.
Maybe it reminds them what they had him at the start of the series. Like, they talk all the time about, oh, we pick our best six batters in any order, and they pick Khawaja over Inglis to start the series. And then obviously Usman's back was no good. He ultimately missed a couple of tests. Inglis got that opportunity. And then when Khawaja was fit again, they decided to hold with Inglis and give him another opportunity. And yet he's had, really, apart from his 100 on debut, but he hasn't really had another score since. He got a couple of starts in the series so far. I think he got a 23 and a 32, but I don't know. I feel like that's one position that either Inglis or Khawaja, you know, in the middle order, and that'll be almost a match race between the pair of them.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm going to throw a little spanner in here, and this is, they're all kind of interrelated, and they always are when there's only 11 spots to discuss. There's always a trade-off somewhere. There is a world where Smith bats at 4, Cameron Green bats at 5, Kerry bats at 6, and Bo Webster bats at 7.
Yep.
And Cummins doesn't play, and you play one of the other fast bowlers. Now you've got fast bowling cover. There's going to be grass on the wicket. We know that, you know, it's a seamer's delight, and so maybe Webster comes in, and like Brisbane, you don't play a spinner, but you've got between Head and Webster, let's call it, I don't know, 10 or 12 overs in innings if you need it. They'll assess the conditions. And I think they'll also pick a squad for the next two test matches. So not that they're back-to-back tests like they used to be, but they are squeezed together. And so there's a world where a Cooper Connolly or your Sydney-type all-rounder, you know, aggressive batter, spinner type, comes in, and they'll have a specialist spinner cover. So they pick an extended squad of 15 and, you know, give them some options around the edges. So if I was to say what I think they'll do, I think that last team I put forward is probably more likely than trying to squeeze Khawaja in, to be honest. And then, you know, the conversation of who that specialist spinner is, maybe we can kind of have a little dive into that.
Absolutely. That's a... Cooper Connolly's name came up yesterday in the box. We were talking about him and as to whether they find something for him to do. I mean, he hasn't. I think he's got like 5 first class wickets ever, and 3 of them this year or whatever. So he's not a huge. He hasn't got a huge resume when it comes to bowling with the red ball. But he played in Sri Lanka, and he's obviously been in and around the team in the past. The spinning option's fascinating. I'm a bit with you. I don't think there's any guarantee that a frontline spinner plays in Melbourne. That the pitches there in recent times have been seem friendly, and so I could easily see them doing exactly what they did up in Brisbane. So if you were to stack them in the depth chart, I feel like the way that it's been set up is line 1, Kuhneman 2, Murphy 3, and then Rocchicholi with a bullet, who all of a sudden is the form spinner in Shield cricket. Is there any reason to suggest if Lyon goes out and it's a home series as opposed to going to the subcontinent or whatever, that order will change?
Well, the only reason would be Kuhneman hasn't done a heap of bowling this summer. He had a little niggle, missed, I think, the A game. He's done a little bit of white ball bowling and played the Big Bash game the other day. So He has played some Shield cricket. He played, but not necessarily in conducive conditions. So yeah. I think as a stack ranking, you're right. But I'm not so sure that that will necessarily be the case. My personal preference is I think he is not just above the ranking, but the left-arm spinner is probably more productive in Australia. Murphy seems to have lost that. I don't know, and I'm a huge fan of Todd Murphy, but, the real ripper. He's kind of, maybe it's too much white ball cricket. Every time I bowl, it feels like it's getting flatter and flatter and flatter with less revolutions. And so, that kind of scares me a little bit. Maybe they'll pick both. I don't know. I mean, as you said, the dark horse is Rocchioli, the form bowler of Shield cricket for the last 2 years, really, 2.5 years. Has been on Australia A tours. He bats. He's won a Shield game off his own bat recently. He's a great fielder. Gets bounce, and so maybe in Australia they go full bolter. That would be, I think, off brand a little bit for this selection panel. So I'm probably putting in the very unlikely, but I think it's worth them sitting around the table and having the conversation.
Yeah. Lots of right-handed in England's team too, so I don't know if that helps Matt Cunneman, whether they think he might be the way to go. The way that England have been batting, I mean, up until the last couple of innings, they haven't been batting too long. The spinners had a whole lot to do anyway. I hope he gets a look in for Matt Cunneman's sake. I mean, he's in this unusual position where it feels like the only time he plays is when he's the second spinner abroad, and so for him to get a home test would be a huge moment for him. What about Cam Green? He's the other one. So when I say the other one, he's the one that's spoken about a whole lot by the cricketing public, and I think we spoke a little bit about this during the test. It feels like he's sort of in this unenviable position at the moment where he's seemingly the golden child that's being pushed and accelerated despite the fact that the numbers aren't necessarily there for him in home conditions. And it sort of reminded me a little bit of, Michael Clarke at the start of his career and Shane Watson and even Mitch Marsh and these guys that kind of get elevated ahead of their time. And then all of a sudden you're dealing not just with trying to take on some of the world's best bowlers in at test level. You're also trying to push back against public sentiment as well and the feeling from the cricket universe.
Yeah, and you could probably throw Mitch Marsh in that bucket as well. I mean, being an all-rounder is bloody hard, full stop.
Yeah.
And we've seen that play out over the last couple of decades to be masters of both crafts. I mean, I don't even think of him as being under pressure at this point in time. You're right, his numbers at the moment aren't stacking up, but that is, an investment that they're willing to make, and I think they'll make it for the long term. And definitely having won the series, there's no need not to keep investing. And so, in my mind, Green plays, he retains, and he'll probably shine in the next two test matches, rather. He doesn't look the player that we know him to be. I think he's bowling pretty well, but his batting has looked pretty shaky at times. Just can't get in, can't get through that first 20 balls. I think their plans to him have been pretty good. So, fingers crossed that he can show the public at home, as you say, All his great work has been done abroad, and that's not great when, the big series bring all the eyeballs to the table and most of Australia haven't yet realised how good a cricketer he is.
No doubt. I mean, people that listen to this pod are clearly hardcore cricket fans, but there's a lot of the general public out there that they follow cricket for 5 or 6 weeks a year, and this is the time that they tune in, and unfortunately for Cam, he's sort of dealing with that burden at the moment. Pat Cummins, so does it look like he's going to play? Obviously, no Josh Hazlewood, so we've got Boland, we've got Stark, and then the question is, who fills the extra spot as the third seamer for Melbourne?
I assume that both Nisa and Doggett will be in the squad, given their success and the squad mentality that they've taken. I don't know who plays out of those two. I think there's a world where if there's a lot of grass on the wicket, they might go for a Nisa. Doggett and Bowler bowling pretty similar style bowlers. Then if Webster plays, you've got another tall seamer, and then you can get someone who can actually swing the ball. But it's probably a toss-up between those two at the moment. Don't know.
Yeah. Jai Richardson, any chance?
No.
Are you still not? You're not on the Jai party?
No, not even close to it.
No, hasn't done enough. Hasn't done the work.
The too risky and puts too much stress if he does break down on Mitchell Starc. I mean, don't forget, Starc and Boland have now played three tests. And so there's a world where one of those two rests, because the last thing we need is either of those two to suffer any kind of long-term injury. And so, you know, there's a few more question marks that people probably aren't thinking about.
And Weatherald gets the series?
Without doubt. Yeah, without doubt. He's showed enough. The head Weatherald partnership and how that has shaped, you know, has at times really, you know, created a great platform for the middle order to go to work. I'm sure he'd want some more runs, but he's looked every bit a test player. You know, there will be a breakthrough 100 at some stage whenever that happens. But there'll be people breathing down his neck as well. We've seen the emergence this season of Campbell Callaway. You know, every time you're 29 or 30 and there's a 21-year-old who, you know, looks the part and starts scoring runs, people always start looking over their shoulder. So I hope he can enjoy this moment and flourish, because, you know, in an ideal world, you know, there's 3 or 4 years of test cricket ahead of him, perhaps maybe longer. But, you know, Callaway and Renshaw, you know, they're putting a lot of pressure on him.
I mentioned the general public and how there are a lot of people that only dip in for these 5 or 6 weeks and follow the test calendar and sort of the Australian cricket team during the Aussie summer. The fact that the series is no longer live, do you think that impacts it at all heading to Melbourne and Sydney in terms of sort of interest?
No, I don't. Not in the slightest. I think Boxing Day test is part of the cultural vernacular and the ritual of sitting down after whatever festive celebration you've had the day before. You know, it's about family and community and actually enjoyment, and, you know, being a public holiday, that is the day, and the ratings prove that. So it won't matter. It doesn't matter who you play on Boxing Day. It's a big day for cricket. You put in an Ashes test, whether the series is live or not. As I said on last night's show, I think 7 of the last 8 Ashes Boxing Day tests have been dead rubbers. So that hasn't stopped the interest.
Yeah. Give me the little rundown on what the Christmas looks like when you're part of the Australian cricket team.
I'm sure it's still very much the same. So usually there's training in the morning, which is a lovely, you know, the kids go, you often see the press taking snaps of kids with Santa hats on. And so the families are welcome at training for a little bit and they walk around the ground. Then there's a, you know, the day before training session, which is pretty light generally. Maybe bowlers might roll a few out, but, you know, some won't. Some batters will hit, some won't. And so it's kind of what you need. They call it a what you need session. There'll be some slips catching. But then everyone that goes back for an amazing kind of luncheon feast, all the families and kids, that it's part of the 2 week period where families, you know, become part of the touring party. So it's a very special day. It really is. It's done very well.
It's the best day on the cricketing calendar, bar none. It's awesome. So can't wait to get back to Melbourne, back home, and get into that come the 26th. Teddy, the BBL, we sort of teased this out during the week with some incredible feats that have taken place over the last couple of days, in particular the epic run chase. And I spoke to Stuart Clark about this the other night, that it had Joburg 2006 vibes about it in a T20 version. So he set 258 to win. The Brisbane Heat were 1 for none, and they end up chasing it down with a ball to spare as Jack Wildermuth and Matt Renshaw both made hundreds in the chase. There were all sorts of records set in the process. Most sixes in an innings, most sixes in a BBL match, second and third highest scores ever totaled. We had record BBL partnership, highest BBL match aggregate, first time 2 centurions in a run chase ever in any T20 game. So that hasn't happened before. And in the end, it was a match in which 515 runs were scored, and the Brisbane Heat win a bonkers game of cricket.
It was a bonkers game of cricket that I think kind of just got put to one side given the drama of Adelaide. Don't think it quite got the dues that it deserved. I mean, amazing the first innings, you know, watching Cooper Connolly go to work, you know, watching him stroke them round everywhere. You thought, wow, we're watching a star emerge, only to be totally gazumped by the Matt Renshaw show. So Woodhamith played nicely, but it was Renshaw that really lit that innings alight. It's actually hard to get your head around 500-odd runs being scored in 40 over cricket. So great wicket. The Gabba was on fire. That's definitely the pick of the first week of the Big Bash. I've kind of struggled. I love the Big Bash. I've struggled to see games through at this rate. That was really the only great game in my mind. So it's been a bit of a sluggish start, I think, on the field, but ratings have been great. Crowds have been great. And so it's good signs for the coming 3 weeks, I think.
Feels like a long time ago now, but we were messaging each other watching Ollie Peake that the other day. I mean, this is a kid, and I know he's sort of well-declared and everyone's sort of seen him coming on the way through, but he's been in and around the Australian team. But this guy's got the chops, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's quite a few of these Victorians coming through, but he looks every bit a cricketer. Just to walk out in the Big Bash on national TV and stroke them round as elegantly as he did. So I get Matthew Elliott vibes. I don't know if you get Matthew Elliott vibes. I see a lot of that in his batting. And he's got every shot and how he played them and how thoughtful he was. There was no out-and-out slogging. It was almost like the antithesis of how a Jake Fraser-McGurk came onto the scene. You know, they were cricket shots, with a dash of elegance. So that is the joy of the Big Bash. We actually start to see these youngsters emerge and emerge well. And, you know, hopefully, you know, you watch the Sixers play, they look a little old to me, they've got lots of experience, which is great, but they haven't quite got the mix right just yet. But, you know, maybe that will change over the coming weeks.
I don't know if you saw the story about the designated hitter, basically, that this was floated a long time ago, and yet there's more reports in recent days that this is on the way to the BBL. Are you a fan of the designated hitter?
I don't mind testing it out. I think it's a format in Australia that we should be pushing the boundaries. I mean, whether it's a designated hitter or a replacement player, more broadly, I'm kind of open to it. If it's a replacement player, the likelihood of that player being a bowler is bugger all and none. So you're basically confined to the designated hitter role. But I don't mind that flexibility. And given that it's a closed league that we control, why wouldn't we test the boundaries of what's interesting? You don't feel the same?
I don't think it's not going to get me to tune in. It's not going to get me to tune out. Sure, why not? I mean, I'm happy enough to have that. I think it extends the batting. I think it proved the other night in the amount of people that were talking about that, heat scorches game. As much as, people love to say, oh, we love a battle between the bat and ball and everything else and stuff. It's like in T20 cricket, people are there to see the ball go over the fence. And if you extend the batting lineup by one, I don't have an issue with that. We're there to
I'll
watch
tell you who loves it. A bloke called Chris Lynn anyone of that ilk, because it will keep them playing for another 3 years of not having to field. You can come in and literally swing and go put your feet up. So there are a few in that bucket.
Yeah. Any other observations out of the BBL before we move on?
BBL specifically, I watched the Sixers Thunder play the other night. The Homebush ground there looked in pretty good nick. It hosted a concert only 10 days prior, and sometimes, those great beat Geelong or Marvel or, Homebush. Sorry, can't call it Marvel. What's it called? Eddie Hill.
Docklands.
Yeah. Geelong or Docklands or the ground in Hobart kind of force pretty average games of cricket, but we've seen in Geelong, Damien Hoff look after the wicket there and has produced a good wicket in the first game. The Homebush wicket looked good, even though it was a lopsided game. I think the season's on, but I'm yet to get really excited, but fingers crossed I do.
Did you watch the IPL auction during the week? I think it took place on day one or not before day one.
I didn't.
No.
Before I saw the outcome, I didn't watch it live.
I was about to say some big bucks for Josh Inglis. So we spoke to him As part of our coverage on grandstand cricket, it must have been the night after, so after day one's play, $1.4 million to the Lucknow Super Giants. He said, look, I knew I was coming up. I was hopeful of going, but I'm only available for part of the tournament, so he wasn't even 100% sure whether he would go. He's getting married around the same time. And then basically went to bed. He said, look, I went to bed, woke up the next day, and my phone had all these messages, and sure enough, he's $1.4 million richer or whatever the pro rata rate is on that. So it's a pretty good way to do it, isn't it? Wake up, get ready to play an Ashes test match, and you've also got a message to say you're now a Lucknow super giant.
Yeah, the Western Australians looking after the Western Australians by listening, of course. It runs thick over there between Moody and Langer, and now Inglis to go there. But you're right, it's pro rata. So they wanted Inglis for what I think is his best format. I actually do believe he's a world-class T20 player and obviously versatile with his keeping as well. So he's a real match winner. It's exciting when players get that opportunity.
I think I set this up last week. Cam Green, $4.17 million to the Kolkata Knight Riders, and yet there's a cap on what he'll actually take home. So $3 million for him, and the extra, basically $1.15, is going to go into a kitty for player development in India, basically. But big bucks to the Knight Riders for Cam Green. Other players that went, Ben Dorsch's $750,000 to Punjab. Cooper Conley went to the Punjab Kings as well. $500,000. Jack Edwards went to the Sunrisers Hyderabad, so he teams up with Head, Cummins and Vittori there. And Matt Short for $249,000 found his way to the Chennai Super Kings. Guys that were overlooked includes Fraser McGurk, Spencer Johnson, Sean Abbott, Riley Meredith, Jai Richardson and Will Sutherland. So a few quicks there, and ordinarily we see the fast bowlers go at this time of the year, Teddy, but no bids for any of those four names.
Yeah, it just depends in these mini auctions actually what the demand is for fast bowlers, whether they're full already. So it's a bit of a quirky one. So I wouldn't look too much into that. But you're right.
Yeah. And I guess the most interesting story out of it all, and I don't know if you got a view on this, was Prashant Veer and Kartik Sharma. So if you don't know a lot about them, you're not meant to. They're essentially guys that have played very limited domestic cricket. Like we're talking, 5 games, 10 games. Little bits here and there. They went for $2.35 million, both of them, to the same team, to the Chennai Super Kings. So basically, one of them is they're hoping to try and make the next Jadeja as a left-arm finger spinner. But they're basically buying early, hoping that these guys turn into the stars that perhaps they're projected to be, and then they'll have the rights to be able to retain them. But, that's big money for guys that are relatively unproven at in men's cricket at professional level.
Yeah, but I mean, yes, unproven. Yes, big money. But there's real value in that retention right if you can unearth a superstar. But it's an expensive option, that's for sure. But anyway, let's see how they go. I don't know anything about them. I've got nothing to add.
All right, that just about does us, Teddy. The next time we chat will be stumps on day one of the Boxing Day test. So most importantly, happy Christmas to you and yours this week, Teddy. Obviously, just a couple of days away, and then all the cricket on Boxing Day. But to you and to your family, and of course to all of our podcast audience as well, we appreciate the hell out of you. We love the opportunity to be able to do this and get together and talk cricket, Teddy. And if no one was listening, we wouldn't be doing it. So we're very grateful for it. And hopefully everyone has a happy and safe Christmas.
Yeah, well said, Corb. Straight back at you. You're right about the audience. It's amazing, actually. These daily recaps have kind of captured a whole new range of people just trying to get their cricket fix. So this is their first Christmas sharing the ABC Cricket Podcast with them. So Merry Christmas to everyone.
Absolutely. I'll chat to you from the MCG following day one of the Boxing Day test. Teddy, chat to you soon.
Later.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.